This message comes from Angie. Tackling a home project, Angie can connect you with pros who do such a good job, you might ask them to be your kid's godfather. Don't do that. Just trust them to get the job done. Find a pro for your projects at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
You know, to most people, the vast job of handling the mails is a mystery. Folks simply drop their mail in the neighborhood box, then don't give it another thought. They just have faith that it will be delivered to the addressee within a day or so, anywhere in the United States, or the whole world, for that matter. Your post office has given such dependable service for so long that speed and accuracy are taken for granted. We're glad for this confidence. Our USA occupies only 1/50th of the globe. But we handle nearly 2/3 of all the mail in the world. These are happy facts for our people. But they create real problems for your postal service.
Passports, prescriptions, mail-in ballots, magazines. The United States Postal Service has been a key piece of infrastructure since it was established in 1775. We rely on the agency to deliver rain or shine. But for nearly every year since 2007, the agency has been plagued with money troubles to the tune of billions of dollars in losses each year. And now the situation is even more dire. Here's what Postmaster General David Steiner told members of the House during a hearing last week.
At our current rate, we'll be out of cash in less than 12 months. So in about a year from now, the Postal Service would be unable to deliver the mail if we continue the status quo.
We asked you what you think about USPS. Here's what Stu in Richmond told us.
The United States Postal Service is in a state of absolute dysfunction where I cannot rely on it to send a letter 3 miles down the road within 4 weeks' time.
How can we fix this? And what, if anything, can or should Congress do to save USPS? I'm Jen White. You're listening to the 1A Podcast. We turn to our guests with those questions and more after this short break.
This message comes from Rinse, who knows that greatness takes time. So does laundry. So Rinse will take your laundry and hand deliver it to your door, expertly cleaned. And you can take the time pursuing your passions. Time once spent sorting and waiting, folding and queuing, now spent challenging and innovating and pushing your way to greatness. So pick up that Irish flute or those calligraphy pens or the daunting beef Wellington recipe card and leave the laundry to Rinse. Rinse. It's time to be great.
This message comes from Stamps.com. Shipping, billing, admin, you're managing all these things. Why waste time sending important documents the old-fashioned way? Mail and ship when you want with Stamps.com. Print postage on demand and schedule pickups from your office or home. That's why over 1 million small businesses trust Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com and use code NPR to try Stamps.com risk-free for 60 days.
Let's get right into the conversation with our Postal Service experts. Joining us in studio is Kevin Kosar. He's a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. That's a public policy think tank in Washington, D.C. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us from Washington, D.C. is Hanzi Lo Wong. He's an NPR correspondent covering elections, the census, and the U.S. Postal Service. Hanzi, it's always great to have you.
Thank you for having me back, Jen.
Now, USPS has been operating at a loss almost every year since 2007, with the exception of 2022. Hanzi, what are the biggest factors contributing to that trend of loss?
You know, the main bottom line here is that fewer people and businesses are relying on the U.S. Postal Service. Think about the rise of paperless billing, digital communication, especially over the past two decades, and that has really upended what is a self-funding model for the U.S. Postal Service. A lot of people may assume that because the Postal Service is a federal government agency, it's run by tax dollars. It is not. It is set up currently to be a self-funded agency relies on stamps and service fees. And again, with fewer people and businesses relying on first-class mail, which is its most profitable product, that means it's not bringing enough revenue to offset its costs, which are increasing given the current state of the economy, given pension benefit issues, health, retiree health benefit issues, how it's going to fund that going forward. This is all this is a problem long-term in the making, long time in the making.
Well, a 2024 study conducted by USPS shows that mail per household fell 37% from 2014 to 2024. Here again is Postmaster General David Steiner.
We got here because of the drastic reduction in the use of the mail. From historic peak volume of 213 billion pieces per year to today at 109 billion pieces per year, we've lost over 104 billion pieces per year in our system. For perspective, if all of that lost volume was paid at the current price of a stamp, which is 78 cents, that's about $81 billion of lost revenue. No company could weather that much revenue loss.
Now, we reached out to the Postmaster General, but he was unable to join us. The invitation remains open. We got this from Dean, who's listening on WFYI in Indianapolis. Why does USPS need to make money? It's a vital government service. Otherwise, should we demand profitability from Congress, the military, law enforcement? And Kevin, what was the argument around making USPS self-funded?
Well, the Postal Service was created as a self-funding entity back in 1970, and it was recreated under this model because the old model of having it be a government agency that got annual appropriations plus stamp revenue didn't work. One of the problems is when an agency takes money from Congress, usually there are strings attached. And so members of Congress over the decades got deeply involved in postal operations. And as a logistics enterprise, that's problematic. When you have members of Congress deciding to set prices based upon interest group and constituent pressures, demanding jobs for people, et cetera, the Postal Service fell apart in the 60s. So they tried to rebirth it as a government corporation.
But Hansi, at the same time, it does work as a piece of important infrastructure in the U.S. And so it sounds like while there is this desire for it to be self-funded and to be able to operate outside of certain, perhaps, government oversight, it's infrastructure. So how are we squaring that circle? So many people rely on the service.
That's the conundrum. It is under a federal mandate to deliver mail and packages 6 days a week to basically every address in the country. This is a key part of the country's infrastructure that isn't replicable right now by any private companies. And so this is a major conundrum. How does it continue providing this service with this self-funding model at a time when fewer and fewer people and businesses are relying on the mail? That's what is before the Congress right now. Why the Postmaster General went to Congress and is ringing this alarm. But again, this has been a long time in the making, and there are some really key structural questions about how the Postal Service can continue in this environment.
Well, speaking of structure, we got this from Doug in D.C. There's so little letter volume and even less legitimate or timely mail that six-day-a-week delivery should cease. Let them sort the mail one day and deliver it the next, if that. Is that part of what's on the table right now, Kevin? Perhaps fewer days of mail delivery?
Yeah, I think if Congress is going to do something, and that's a huge if, it's going to come as a package of reforms. You may have loans in there, but also decreased days of service in an attempt to reduce the employee compensation costs, which comprise about 75% of the Postal Service's annual operating costs. A lot of overseas posts, they've also cut the days of delivery just to, in response to the dropping of demand. Again, mail volume has plunged about 50% in this country since 2008.
Well, even though USPS hasn't turned a profit in almost 20 years, as we've been talking about, mail delivery doesn't stop, and that's because the agency borrows money from the U.S. Treasury to maintain operations. Now, in recent years, it's also suspended pension payments and some retiree benefits, but federal law caps USPS borrowing at $15 billion, and the agency has reached its debt limit. So, Hansi, how does that current borrowing limit set for USPS by Congress affect the organization?
Well, the U.S. Postal Service officials say that is really tying its hands in a way and not allowing it to continue investing in infrastructure and developing new ways to become more efficient. And it also is just hurting its bottom line because it can't borrow more money. The Postmaster General says, you know, this is a cap that was set back and it's been in place since 1992, so more than three decades now. And the Board of Governors at the Postal Service has also been calling for Congress to revisit that law to allow the Postal Service to borrow more money. That's something that, you know, the top Democrat on the House Oversight Subcommittee, where the Postmaster General went to give testimony, seemed to support, but there seemed to be some skepticism from Republican lawmakers. So that is one of many options that lawmakers right now are considering, given what the Postmaster General has requested.
Well, how much of an effect is the agency's suspension of pension payments and some of those retiree benefits having on its debt and operating budget?
Well, back in 2022, there was a law that passed that forgave about $57 billion in past due pre-funding payments to retiree health benefits and also got rid of a requirement to prepay future retiree health benefits requirement under an earlier law. And that resulted in the only year in the past two decades, only fiscal year, where the Postal Service didn't end without a shortfall. And so that was a big support for the Postal Service's bottom line. But we're at a point now where that didn't get rid of all of the requirements for the Postal Service to pay into its pension fund for retired workers, as well as retiree health benefits. So it's a complicated system, complicated set of systems, and there are a lot of reforms that the Postmaster General says needs to be made in order to help make sure that the Postal Service remains stable and also that its retired workers get their benefits and their pensions when they retire.
Well, we got this from Matt in New York. This is a great opportunity for Democrats to show they care and understand the lives of rural America. Snail mail is vital to this rural and older voting population. Now, 2026 is shaping up to be an important midterm election year that could shift the balance of power in Congress. Kevin, briefly, what role does USPS play in our electoral infrastructure?
Oh, they carry a huge amount of ballot materials that are going out to voters, whether it's the voter guides, or whether it's the absentee ballots that are requested. In some states, you don't even have to request them. They just go out automatically. I think last election, 2024, there were about 48 million Americans who voted by mail, deposited their ballot with the USPS.
Elizabeth on VPR emails, when we lived in North Carolina, one of the simple rituals of daily life was seeing our mail carrier arrive. We knew him. We talked with him. He was part of the neighborhood. It was just a small, positive moment in the day, but it felt like a real thread in the social fabric, and it was our link to home. Back with more from you and our guests in just a moment.
This message comes from BetterHelp. This International Women's Day, let's celebrate the leaders, the caregivers, the hype friends. With all they handle, women need to care for themselves, and therapy is a great way to do that. Visit BetterHelp.com/NPR. This message comes from Carvana, who makes car selling easy. Enter your license plate or VIN, get a real offer in minutes, and have your car picked up from your door. Sell your car the easy way with Carvana. Pickup fee may apply.
Let's get back into the conversation and add a new voice. Richard R. John is a history and communications professor at Columbia Journalism School. He's also the author of Spreading the News, The American Postal System from Franklin to Morse. Richard, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So the founding of USPS predates the country itself. And though dire, the agency's current financial crisis isn't unprecedented. In 2020, the agency had a similar financial outlook. It was able to turn around with Congress's help. But Richard, from your perspective, when was USPS's greatest fiscal crisis and what brought it on?
The greatest fiscal crisis confronting the post office was in the 1840s, when by some estimates it lost half to two-thirds of its revenue due to competition from private independent firms, so-called expresses. This problem was seen as such magnitude that Congress responded by, in effect, forcing expresses out of the market, dropping postal rates, and granting the post office what we would today call a legal monopoly, which had not been settled before that time. Congress responded quickly. because of the enormous importance of the institution, which was recognized by all, not only to the commerce, but also to a public life, to elections, to the pattern of everyday existence, as your commentators have so well emphasized. So that was the greatest crisis. And the crisis today perhaps would be right up there. But there really is a question as to whether we should call it a crisis or simply a difference of opinion about, as you put it so well, the importance of infrastructure in our daily lives.
Well, today, USPS faces competition from other private delivery companies. There's Amazon, UPS, FedEx, particularly when it comes to packages or parcels. And some of you are weighing whether to use USPS or a competitor.
Hi, my name is Janet, and I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. And I am a full-time eBay seller, and I use the United States Postal Service quite frequently. Most of my packages go out using USPS. And I've seen price increases in the past 5 to 10 years, and it's just too much. So if they keep increasing this, this can hurt online resellers, people who are self-employed, people who use it for their small business to survive. I wish FedEx or UPS would lower prices on smaller packages that are 1 pound or less. That would make things a lot more affordable. So then if USPS did raise their prices, I could go with another company.
Hansi, how are these other big shipping companies gaining the upper hand in the package market over USPS?
Well, USPS has been for a long time just really focused on delivering letters, mail, not so much parcels in postal service lingo or packages. And certainly with the rise of online shopping, a lot of more people receiving, sending packages nowadays, and it's trying to boost its revenue by investing more resources and really restructuring its systems to get more into that business side. That's something that Postmaster General David Steiner said is one of his focuses. But it is coming kind of late with, you know, with the rise of online shopping and these shipping companies. They're ahead of the curve right now. And it is a big question whether or not USPS, you know, can catch up. It is interesting to point out, though, that what the Postal Service does have an advantage here is that it has what's known as the last mile network. A lot of places in the country are so remote that FedEx, UPS, they cannot reach. They don't have the infrastructure to reach that last leg of the trip to get a package to certain parts of the country. And that's where USPS comes in and has that network, again, because it's under a federal mandate to reach basically every address in the country. And right now, the Postal Service is trying to increase the revenue from that last mile network by opening up bids from big shippers and small shippers to try to see if it can get more money from utilizing that network from companies like Amazon.
Well, that competition with companies like Amazon is why Postmaster General Steiner is pushing for looser regulations.
We're regulated like a monopoly, but we no longer exist as one. In fact, we're regulated worse than a monopoly because even a monopoly is allowed to make money. Our regulator causes us to lose billions annually. Just recently, they passed an order that, by their own estimate, could lose us nearly $1 billion a year. Clearly, they're not following their mandate to make the Postal Service financially viable.
Now, USPS is regulated by the Postal Regulatory Commission. The commission is made up of 5 members, each appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate for 6-year terms. Kevin, what do you make of the Postmaster General's assessment that USPS is too strictly regulated?
Well, I've heard postmasters in the past blame the Postal Regulatory Commission for the Postal Service's woes. And I think that's a common Washington line where it's the problem is not us. The problem is those guys over there, the PRC, as we call it. It does not have a lot of authority. I mean, the Postal Service, if it wants to change prices, submits it to the PRC, the PRC reviews it, and then it could say thumbs up or thumbs down, but the Postal Service can then just kind of do what it wants. PRC has very little enforcement authority. You know, again, the real problems with the Postal Service's finances is just the drop for what they do. There's fewer people who demand the mail. And, you know, most Americans don't pay a penny towards this public service. We don't have taxpayer dollars supporting it. And that's why we are where we are.
Richard, your thoughts, especially when you look at the long history of USPS?
The post office has lost money for much of its history, but that was not a public issue because it was understood, as you put it so well, as infrastructure from 1851 until the 1960s. It was so important that the issue almost never came up. In fact, the 1880s, the presumption was the post office was doing a better job than Western Union, than the leading network provider, platform for what we now call email. So it's an odd claim that the problem is somehow the market has changed. The post office has been constrained by Congress from day one. Congress has prevented it from getting into lucrative markets. Congress has limited its autonomy. Congress has burdened it in various ways, sometimes in good faith, sometimes not. The post office provides a service in many communities that cannot be matched at same cost by other providers. And if the post office were not there, cost would go up because the other providers do not have the same kind of obligation that the post office has. So I find it to be somewhat bad faith to contend that the problem is somehow existential issues over which the post office has no control. I agree with the Postmaster General. The institution has been put in a bad box by Congress. Congress can do something about it. It's been under the authority of Congress right from the start. And I do believe that if constituents are heard from, that constituents will want to preserve this vital American institution. Important not only at election time, but all around the year, especially for small business, especially in parts of the country that are outside of the metropolitan core. And that is something that may not be obvious to listeners from, say, Washington, New York, Boston. This is a nationwide institution that's absolutely essential to our civic fabric.
I mean, Kevin, you hear Richard's response there, and I'm curious from your perspective, could two things be true? That on one hand, the market has changed in ways that weren't anticipated, when the USPS was first established, and at the same time, the regulations that Congress has put in place make it more difficult for the agency to respond to those changes in the market.
Oh, absolutely. I was contending that, picking on the regulator, the PRC, was a diversion from the real problem. No, I mean, the U.S. Congress requires Postal Service to deliver mail 6 days per week. The U.S. Congress does not provide money to support that public service. Rather, they say you, the Postal Service, have to earn it. And by the way, you also have to have unionized labor. And by the way, you have to do all sorts of stuff. And all these things cost money. And we were able to afford them under the self-funding model when we had mail volume growing year after year and when first-class mail was this fantastically lucrative business. But those days are done, and that's where we have to have a serious conversation. What do we want from the Postal Service, and how are we going to pay for it?
We're also hearing from so many of you. Nomi in Indiana says, although many people in the country have other options for sending mail and packages, many do not. People in rural areas, remote areas, and poorer areas simply have no other choices. The USPS as a government service serves everyone. How about Congress asks us what we want? And Isla emails, I have financial power of attorney for my mom, and I pay all of her bills. She lives in a place where not all bills can be paid online, so I rely on the USPS to take proper care of her. The USPS, in other words, is her lifeline. I mean, Hansi, how are Americans responding to the potential of the USPS going away, as we heard from the Postmaster General? I mean, is Congress clear on what the American people want?
Well, if you listen to how lawmakers responded at this recent House Oversight Subcommittee hearing, there seems to be bipartisan interest in stabilizing the Postal Service and a general consensus, as much as there can be in today's Congress, that the Postal Service is a really vital part of the country and it should not go away. There is bipartisan support right now to not privatize the Postal Service among lawmakers in Congress. And so, you can take from that that there is a recognition that this is, generally speaking, a publicly beloved institution and that should be saved in some way. The big question is, how do you do that? There are a lot of people, again, who still rely on the Postal Service to receive medication, to vote, to do very vital things. I know there's some places in the country where you can't register to vote online. You can only do it in person or by mail. And so this is a real key part of the infrastructure that a lot of people out in the public still recognize needs to exist.
Now, Kevin, when I asked that question of Hansi, I saw a tiny little shake of your head when I asked if Congress was aware of what the American people want. So I'd love to hear your perspective as well.
Yeah, it's been my observation of with 2 decades of observing Congress up close when it deals with postal issues. Mostly they hear from organized interests and the Postal Service itself. The conversation tends to be very within the Beltway. And there's a whole range of other interests out there that do not get representative in congressional hearings. And sure, members of Congress do get mail and emails and things like that, so they may hear about it there. But the official conversations, like we had on Capitol Hill the other week, you didn't have an average member of the American public there. You did not have an elderly individual in a rural area saying, here's why the Postal Service is important to me. You didn't have somebody who, during the COVID pandemic, relied upon the Postal Service to get them parcels and COVID tests. Those voices are not being heard, and I think it does distort policymaking and biases things towards kind of a status quo. Let's just keep doing what we're doing and hope it gets better. But it's not.
Yeah. Richard, when you think about the history of the USPS, I wonder if it is in part a victim of its own success. We talk about that in public health, that we don't see certain diseases anymore because public health efforts have been successful, but not having visibility of the impact of those illnesses sort of makes that public health infrastructure disappear and be into the background and be a little less valued. Is USPS in a similar boat?
I agree entirely. Like so many things we take for granted, you hit a light switch, light goes on. We just assume that it's part of the fabric of everyday existence, and we don't really think about what would happen if it were gone. I don't think the post office is going away. There have been talks about the crisis of the post office now for decades. This is part of an elaborate political drama, which is fine. And I agree with Kevin that certain groups are being heard and other groups are not being heard. But, you know, when Mitt Romney, he was running for president, he was going to defund the Big Bird, but he didn't want to defund the post office. I don't believe that a politician is going to run on a platform of defunding the post office. And in fact, it's hard to think of a politician who ever has. And in fact, The history suggests that we've gone very much in the other direction. The groups that historically have blocked the expansion of the post office and merchandise delivery, or what we call parcel post, is an excellent example, have been businessmen who'd be adversely affected by the expansion of the institution. And I suspect Kevin might well agree, he knows this story much better than I do, that is the case today. There are powerful business groups that do not want the post office to succeed. And I think we need to get that on the table if we want to understand the actual dynamics inside the Beltway. And those are not dynamics that involve ordinary Americans trying to make a living by shipping items through the mail, that if the post office did not exist, they would have a very difficult time doing, because the other carriers do not have the same kind of obligation the post office does, and they would raise the rates. And I think that's the issue that we need to focus on, the centrality of the institution to the well-functioning of a commercial economy, as well as integrity of our election process.
Well, we're hearing from lots of you. John, listening on WUNC in Durham, emails, the U.S. Postal Service provides an essential service for the American people. Nobody asks whether police or fire services should be solvent. If the USPS were to disappear, private carriers would be free to withdraw service from unprofitable areas or charge exorbitant rates. Instead of eliminating the USPS, it should be expanded to incorporate banking and other basic public services under one roof. And Stephen emails, as a courier working for one of the major companies, I can ship things at a discount, but otherwise it's pretty expensive. I think the USPS should be a fully public service that doesn't need to make a profit. Then the private carriers would have to be more competitive and therefore more affordable. More thoughts about the USPS from our guests and you after a short break.
This message comes from Carvana, who makes car selling easy. Enter your license plate or VIN, get a real offer in minutes, and have your car picked up from your door. Sell your car the easy way with Carvana. Pickup fee may apply.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Warby Parker, the one-stop shop for all your vision needs. They offer expertly crafted prescription eyewear, plus contacts, eye exams, and more. For everything you need to see, visit your nearest Warby Parker store or head to warbyparker.com.
Well, we heard from so many of you, including Ashley, who listens from WUSF in Lakeland, Florida. Ashley emails, I love the U.S. Postal Service and sending snail mail. Every trip I go on, I try and send at least 5 postcards from a local store and at the local post office. I have friends who love receiving my mail and look forward to the postage marks. But not everyone is as happy with the service they get from USPS. Let's go to our voicemail box.
Hi, my name is Jackie, and I live in Windsor, Colorado. And I'm actually not a fan of the U.S. Postal Service. I'm a small business owner and recently mailed out a bunch of thank you gift cards to my clients to thank them for something. And several of them came back ripped open with the gift card missing and an oops, we lost your package type of a message. The other thing is we get so much junk mail and it's such a waste in so many ways. There's almost nothing that I mail anymore. Using all the other companies, Amazon, UPS, FedEx, there's just other carriers. And I just think that the sad news is that the post office has kind of become obsolete.
Jackie, thanks for that message. Richard, your response to her assertion there that the post office is obsolete now.
Yeah, no, I hear that. Friends, and I still send a holiday newsletter, but I don't get a lot of personal correspondence. Look, the institution's been put into a box. There have been changes that have occurred. We all know about email and internet. First-class mail is not likely to be the future of the institution. There's a lot of potential for growth in merchandise delivery. Post office is also potential. Postal banking, also potential. All kinds of retail services. The institution has to be unleashed so it can do that. I am not entirely confident that that will happen, but that is a political question that has been and will be made within Congress. So the institution, I agree with the Postmaster General, has been put in a very difficult position. 6-day delivery is not the be-all and end-all. It's important to the unions. But what is important is we recognize that we need to find ways to keep this institution vital so that letters, thank you notes do get through as they once did, and they should in the future.
Well, most of us think about, mailing that thank you note or shipping a package, maybe getting a passport photo taken at the post office. But Hansi, what other services does USPS carry out that might be disrupted if the agency was unable to operate?
You know, one of the most interesting things that the Postal Service does that I learned since started covering the Postal Service, that it also ships human remains, ashes sometimes. And so it's just another example of all the things that could be easily taken for granted or you just don't think about. I think a key part of this is that there are some parts of the country, particularly rural communities, where private shippers are not going to go or don't see a profit in serving those communities. And that's where the Postal Service can be relied upon. There are certainly questions about the level of service and the quality of service that some customers are experiencing, especially over the past 5 years as the Postal Service continues undergoing this reorganization, the Delivering for America plan that was started under the previous Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy. This is a plan that has really transformed a lot of really behind-the-scenes infrastructure at the Postal Service, including how often mail gets picked up when it's dropped off at a post office or at one of those big blue boxes, how mail gets processed. And it has led to some delivery delays in some parts of the country and changing of mailing standards. And some folks may be experiencing that, especially these past recent years.
Kevin, your thoughts about services carried out by USPS that we may not think about?
Yeah. How do we seat a jury? Bill of Rights guarantees that we're supposed to get trial by jury. Well, most municipalities, the system they use is the Postal Service sending out those letters. So that's a key right that is basically dependent upon the Postal Service. I know there's a lot of listeners out there who love books. Hmm. Well, guess what? There's a class of mail called media mail, and it is a reduced rate. And publishers and used booksellers on eBay and elsewhere, they rely upon that to get books to customers. Postal Service goes away, right there, you've got two things that are going to be very difficult to fix.
Well, we heard from Sherry, who emails, I run a small business out of my home in North Little Rock, Arkansas. I rely heavily on the Postal Service, and it has never let me down. I have never even had a lost package. It is quick and inexpensive compared to FedEx or UPS. Furthermore, I have lived in four different countries, and there is no comparison to what we have with the USPS. People like to complain, but have you really thought about what life would be like without the reliable Postal Service we seemingly take for granted in the U.S.? Live somewhere this service doesn't exist and see what it is like. We also got this from a member of the National Association of Letter Carriers Union, Chris, who emails, the Postal Service is top-heavy, way too many admin jobs. They need to start cutting all positions that don't directly deal with mail service. Kevin, talk a little bit about how USPS is structured. Now, there have been layoffs in recent years to the tune of thousands of workers, but is structure part of the problem with the agency?
Well, look, we have more than 600,000 full-time unionized postal workers. That's not a giant workforce compared to the past. In the early 90s, I think it was up to about 900,000. We have a huge number of postal employees who are retired now. And of course, they're drawing benefits, benefits they earned and that were guaranteed to them through collective bargaining. So this Postal Service is a labor-intensive activity. I mean, if you're going to reach all 50 states, if you're going to get out to Hawaii, you're going to get to American Samoa, Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, you need people. And people, the compensation costs tend to rise. I appreciate that, you know, there may be too many managers here or there, but they're a really tiny portion of the workforce. Postal Service's ability to control its cost is bound up intimately with the fact that it just has to hire a lot of people, and the cost of employing anybody is going to go up year after year.
We got this question from Carol in Massachusetts. Why in the world aren't citizens charged for home delivery? Couldn't that go a long way in making the service solvent? I pay $180 a year for a P.O. box, which uses no delivery truck and all of the maintenance that entails. Richard, when we look across the history of the United States Postal Service, has there ever been a discussion about more direct consumer to Postal Service payment?
That's a really interesting question. Post office boxes originated in the early Republic, 1850s. They were a major source of revenue for city postmasters. And in fact, it was a perquisite. So there was that precedent there. But the idea of actually paying for access to the network, other than paying through the cost of sending or receiving a letter, was not seriously discussed, in part because of what contemporaries called the postal principle, which was that costs should be the same for everyone in the country, regardless of distance, which was a principle that made no sense economically, but it was considered to be a civic value. And it was an enormously important civic value for much of our history. You have one postage stamp, cost goes up, but that will get you a letter anywhere in the country. It was not the case in the early Republic with all classes of mail, and that is certainly not the case with FedEx or UPS. So there was a commitment to universal access, or to what they called the postal principle, that would militate against the idea of charging certain individuals for certain kinds of access. But it's certainly an interesting idea. The goal is to keep the institution up and running, healthy, providing Americans with services that they need. And there's certainly opportunities for innovation.
You talked about the price of mailing a letter. Last week in a hearing before the House Committee on Oversight and Reform, Postmaster General David Steiner proposed a few solutions to cut costs and raise revenue at USPS, and that included raising the cost of stamps.
At 78 cents, the U.S. first-class stamp is the lowest in the industrialized world. Compare it to France at almost $3, and England at $2.50. And the longest distance those letters have to travel is about 600 miles, smaller than the state of Texas. We deliver from the tip of Puerto Rico to the tip of Alaska for 78 cents. That's a distance of 5,000 miles. So we sell the stamp at less than half the cost to travel eight times farther. If we were to change the stamp price to 90 to 95 cents, which is still less than half of the cost of foreign posts, that would largely solve our controllable loss. And the stamp would still be the lowest in the industrialized world, by a lot.
The price of stamps has increased modestly over time from 49 cents in 2015 to 78 cents in 2025, and it was a major source of funding for the USPS. Hansi, what is the case for raising the cost of stamps and briefly also against it?
Well, the Postal Service says, you know, that it's trying to keep up with the market and that it's taking a look at its competitors and seeing what they're charging for shipping rates for mailing letters. And they're trying to keep up and think that they are leaving, leaving money on the table. But there are a lot of advocates of people and businesses that rely on the mail that are saying, you know, increasing prices is not going to solve, again, the problem of how to sustain this self-funding model for the Postal Service. You know, the recent increase last July to 78 cents for a first-class forever stamp, that was the seventh time in the past 4 years that the Postal Service has raised the price of a stamp. And right now, there are some calls from the Postmaster General, as you just heard, to increase it again. And there's some tension between the Postal Service and the Postal Regulatory Commission of how often and how frequently the Postal Service can continue raising stamp prices.
So many of you across the country are chiming in on this conversation. Lynn in Vermont emails, "My wife and I have lived in very rural parts of Alaska that do not have home delivery service, only a brick-and-mortar post office. We never understood why home delivery is free while post office boxes cost money. Home delivery is far more of a service than a P.O. box is. We now live high on a mountain in Vermont with many miles of dirt road, and we know what the post office vehicles and drivers go through to bring mail to us 6 days a week. It is a luxury that is taken for granted by most." And Paige emails, "I'm a rural mail carrier in Kentucky. I don't think a lot of Americans realize just how important the USPS is to rural communities, not only for election purposes, but importantly, medicine. A lot of rural communities depend on the Postal Service to get their medication because they're pretty far from pharmacies. Also, if we went down to 5-day-a-week delivery, it will just increase the amount of overtime for many offices." You know, the post office isn't a business. It's a government agency tasked with covering its own operating costs. I mean, Richard, ultimately, this comes down to this question of whether USPS should operate as a business. And I'm curious where you see that conversation going.
Well, Kevin made the good point that this has been the mandate since the establishment of the United States Postal Service. As recently as the 1950s, Congress debated and reports were issued. It was very clear that it's not a business. It instead is a service. Post office lost money from 1851 to the 1960s. Almost no one cared. And the institution was regarded as a jewel in the crown of American government and one of the wonders of the world. The miracle of 39th Street was all, in the end, the plot hinges on whether or not the postmaster, general of the United States, is reliable in sending a letter to Santa Claus. That was how the institution was seen in the 20th century. We spend money on a lot of things in the United States. On police, we spend money on fire. You could name other things we're spending money on right now. And it seems to me that the importance of the post office outweighs the expenditure made for it. That's a question that ultimately will be debated by Congress because of the relationship of the institution to Congress. But I'm of the view, and if we had a discussion with the American people, such as you've managed to bring on the air today, I think that they would agree. The criticisms are not that we shouldn't have an institution, but that the institution should work better than it's working now. And with that assertion, I wholeheartedly agree.
Well, I want to get to one last message from our voicemail.
My name is Don from Albuquerque, New Mexico. I try when possible to pay my bills using the Postal Service. My dad used to say there's somebody employed on the other end who's in charge of opening your bill, so that helps in that respect. I try to do all I can to support the Postal Service. It's a small thing to put a stamp on a bill or on a letter, and I'm glad to do it. And if more of us would do that, I think it might help the fiscal situation a little bit.
Thanks for that message. Now, Hansi, looking ahead, dozens of U.S. postal carriers will act as census takers this spring during a test of the 2030 census in Spartanburg, South Carolina, and Huntsville, Alabama. What are you watching for there as USPS and the Census Bureau team up?
Well, this is carrying out an idea that has been brought up for many decades. Can letter carriers replace temporary census workers and interview in-person households that don't fill out a census form themselves? Is that a way potentially to help save money for the government and bring down the cost of conducting a census, especially among households that don't fill out a form on their own? And the Trump administration is picking up the ball and trying to carry this out with the census test, which they have dramatically scaled back. And essentially, the focus of this test is just really on testing how these letter carriers can do that job. In Huntsville, Alabama, households that don't fill out a form, they won't recognize these letter carriers as letter carriers because they will be sworn in as census workers. In Spartanburg, South Carolina, they will appear as letter carriers. And during their delivery route, they may try to interview some households. And so we'll see how this turns out. The GAO, Government Accountability Office, has done a report back in 2011, found that this would not be a cost-effective way, and we'll see what the results are from this test.
Well, that's NPR correspondent Hansi Lo Wong. Also with us, Kevin Kosar, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, and Richard R. John. He's a history and communications professor at Columbia Journalism School. Thanks to you all. Today's producer was Lauren Hamilton with help from Xavier Stokely. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.
This message comes from Midi Health, introducing AgeWell, longevity care designed by women for women. Whether you're looking to prevent future health issues or just feel more like yourself, learn more at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com. This message comes from Alexa Plus. Say hello to Alexa Plus and see how Alexa can do more for you. Craving your favorite restaurant? Alexa's on it. Free with Prime on your Amazon devices. Learn more at amazon.com/AlexaPlus. This message comes from IXL. Spring is here and school testing is just around the corner. IXL can help. Make an impact on your child's learning. Receive 20% off an IXL membership if you sign up today at IXL.com/NPR.